we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from My Wicklow Way, read by Neil Sleet.
Summer is an excellent time of year to go discovering Wicklow's walking trails. Midgets might be a problem, but a spray or two of repellent should keep those pests away.
And our thanks to Alison Leslie for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkind and Jeremy Hardy. Susan, why is economics all Greek to us?
Yes, this is about the Eurozone. As I understand it, Greece is in a bit of bother. So the European leaders had essentially a pyjama party, but instead of talking about who should have gone out in the X Factor, they talked about how to help Greece. And they came up with a solution, which is things like the banks that are owed money by Greece are cutting 50% off the debts. They've called it a haircut. I think is a lovely way of putting it. And they're increasing the amount of money that they have to give to countries that are in trouble, and it's 1 trillion euros. Mm. You have to say it in the way that it's meant, 1 trillion euros, just to give it the proper import. So they all got together. The thing I quite liked about it, I grew increasingly fond of Angela Merkel. I think she's fabulous.
I think she's great.
She just sorts things out. Mm. She's the type of woman, if there was some form of disaster, you'd want her on your side. Because she could, like, melt down railings and create ammunition. You know, she just looks like the kind of woman that would have no nonsense. She would ram raid a supermarket to get tinned goods and you'd be off in 5 minutes.
Did you see the size of her handbag? It was like a sort of Mary Poppins thing. You thought, oh, any minute now, she's going to produce another European country out of it.
If a country can just be let off the debt, or half of its debt, can't we all just not pay our debts? Can't we all just say, we spent it, it's gone, we lost it, sorry. You can't have it back.
No.
Why not? Oh, Fred's an accountant.
Because, I'm a comedian, but I... The reason I disagree with that is because I've only got about 7 months to go in my mortgage, so... The trillion euros and Angela Merkel.
Is that how you pronounce it?
That's how I pronounce it. But did she not sound threatening this week? Did she not say, we cannot guarantee peace? It was kind of,
a slightly sort of xenophobic thing I felt, that the minute a German threatens war, you start to pay that bit more attention, don't you?
I like the press conference she gave with Sarkozy. They were standing next to each other and someone said, you must be relieved now Silvio Berlusconi's here. And they just sort of looked at each other and actually laughed on camera.
He was serious, though, about the austerity measures, Berlusconi, because I think he only turned up with a hooker on one arm. I think that was...
There's also a fabulous video of Berlusconi. So this is a really serious thing, OK? Everything could go down the tube. We could all be in a lot of trouble, and Berlusconi's there, and he's trying to be quite statesmanlike for once. And a journalist has filmed him, and it was the Danish Prime Minister.
She's lovely.
Right?
Did you see her sitting next to Cameron? I just thought, oh, shame for the Brits.
Berlusconi went up and was shaking everyone's hands. Hello, hello, hello. Danish Prime Minister. Shake the hands. And as she walks off, he just goes,
No. In an emergency summit in Brussels, Eurozone leaders agreed a bailout deal for Greece that placated the markets. Under the deal, the European Financial Stability Facility is to be boosted from 440 billion euros to 1 trillion euros. And Nicolas Sarkozy will be melted down for scrap. Leaders of the 17 Eurozone nations held talks long into the night while David Cameron sat in the car with a lemonade and some crisps. Two points to Susan. Fred, who finally has proof that his backbenchers are revolting?
This is David Cameron, who this week was humiliated when a number of backbenchers didn't obey the whip. Just like the jockeys over the last few weeks, they ignored what was coming out of the whip office. But Michael Gove popped up the morning after and said that the Conservative Party were united like never before, which means divided. That'd be like Alex Ferguson coming out after the Man City game and going, Well, we beat them like never before. Except you would say, oh, yeah. Oh.
Do you not think that Europe for the Tories is what Yoko Ono was for the Beatles? Just know it'll be what splits them in the end.
Well, they were all going, we want to reclaim these powers. And you're like, well, what powers? Name a power. And they're like, oh, no, X-ray vision. I don't know, the power of Grayskull. I don't know, I can't think of any powers. But it's a three-way referendum they want. It's basically in, out, or shake it all about.
Let's ask the audience what they think.
That's dangerous.
Looks to me like they're united, like they've never been united before.
It is sort of the limits of democracy, though, isn't it, really? Because everyone's saying, no, we can't have a referendum on Europe because it would mean that we'd then have to leave, because that's what everyone would vote for, and it would be chaos. So it is a kind of admission that our experiment with universal suffrage is faltering slightly.
But the weird thing is, that's not actually how it would work, because it's this three-part... They've got it wrong, basically. This three-part... Sorry, this isn't funny at all, but this three-part referendum...
It's the way you're telling it.
Yeah. So I'll do it, and maybe you can think of a joke afterwards. This three-part referendum they want, it's kind of, you know, it's stay in or leave...
This referendum walks into a bar.
Or the renegotiation... I'm just... Forget it.
I was really interested in what you were saying there, Hugo. That was really interesting.
I'll email you.
I'd actually like a referendum on Europe. I don't have any strongly held beliefs. I left my umbrella in the polling booth in May 2010. Quite due with getting it back.
Irritable Duncan syndrome got very angry.
Did he?
With the whip, he said that if you ever, ever...
Whip me again.
Ever whip me again.
Not the first Tory to say that.
Yeah. I won't stand for it. I will vote for the referendum.
I'll give an extra point. Does anybody know about the Conservative MEP who is standing down? Does anybody know about this?
Yes.
Extra point, yep.
Yes.
You do know about well it, done, is that Susan. It? Is that all you're saying? You do know about it.
Point to us in the bag.
You.
Well done.
Well,
I don't want to talk about it. It's too upsetting.
So. Well, extra point there for Susan. David Cameron has convincingly defeated a bid to grant a referendum on Britain's membership of the EU, although there are concerns about party unity after 81 Tories defied a three-line whip. In addition to the 81 who voted against the government, 15 Tories abstained. I say abstained. They were too busy bricking up the Channel Tunnel to vote. The vote highlighted the range of opinions on Europe in the Tory party. Some are very hardened Eurosceptics, but others will still allow croissants to be served on special days. 2 points to Fred and the extra point there for Susan. Well done, Susan. Hugo, could you squeeze up a bit and make some more room?
You're probably talking about the 7 billionth person is about to be born.
Yes.
They're going to be born on Halloween, which is a bit spooky. Mm. It's sort of like in The Omen, where the kid had 666 on his head, they're going to have 7 billion on their head. Which means, of course, someone's going to have to figure out what 7 billion is, because no one's sure if we're talking about a British billion or an American billion, because an American billion is 1,000 million.
Yeah.
A British billion is 1 million billion.
That would make a big difference if you're in the queue.
It would, wouldn't it? But no, everyone says it's going to be a terrible problem with that many people on the planet, but it won't, because we can just eat each other.
I know that there are already 7 billion people in the world, and they were all on my train from Milford Haven to Cardiff Central this morning. But the trouble is that the sort of Malthusian population fanatics have discredited themselves. Because when we were kids, well, when I was a kid, all the talk was about, God, by the year 2000, oh, there's going to be so many people in the world that if everyone breathes in at the same time, then Mars will be sucked into the Earth and it will break open. Dinosaurs will come out. And none of those things came true.
There's two major concerns for me regarding increase in population. Number one, I don't react well in crowds, as it is. And the second thing is, one of my major concerns in life is toilets, finding toilets, because toilets
in
are very
important.
In what
way? Just to use them, or you like
well,
to admire?
The thing is, my mother always told me, always go to a toilet when you see a toilet, because you never know when you're going to see another toilet. And it means I never really need the toilet, but it means I go to the toilet quite a lot. And if there's more people, it could really seriously affect my quality of life.
Did you know? If there is a Holocaust, right, they reckon only two things will survive: the cockroach
and Susan.
The cockroach and the vitreous toilet bowl. Those would be the two things that will survive a Holocaust. Now, here's the curious thing about cockroaches. They keep all their uric acid in their body. So the one creature on the planet that never needs to go to the toilet would survive along with the toilet.
Your mum giving you that advice, always use the toilet when you see a toilet.
Yeah.
It must be a Scottish thing. My old man told me, always wear a condom. From 16 to 19, I had it on. I had enough uric acid on me to survive a Holocaust.
According to the United Nations Global Population Report, the world's population will reach 7 billion next week. According to experts, the increase in population is due to rising birth rates. How do they know that? The UK population apparently is going to reach 70 million by 2027. Britain will have more people than France. But on the plus side, none of them will be French. So there we are.
Doesn't Scotland have a shrinking population?
Scotland's bottomed out. We're picking up again. There's more breeding going on.
You took that condom off. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Jeremy have got 4 points, but Susan and Fred are in the lead with 5. We start round two with a sign spotted in Upton-upon-Severn.
Get your pet microchipped. Cost £12 per dog or cat, £10 for OAP.
And our thanks to John Keane for sending us that. Susan, whose position is past tense?
This is about the occupation outside St Paul's Cathedral, and it was Giles Fraser, the Reverend Dr Giles Fraser, resigned today because...
Or possibly yesterday.
Or yesterday.
Or possibly the day before, depending on when you're listening.
The Reverend Dr Giles Fraser resigned, and...
In the past.
At some point. And if you're listening to this in 2015, bonjour. And... going to happen sometime. So, yes, because he disagreed with what might happen with the Occupy London protests. So they're protesting outside St Paul's, and people are saying, why don't they just move? Because they're protesting. What do you want them to do, sit in their houses and go, well, we would have, but we've got a Tannock's tea cake, you know?
This guy who's resigned, Giles Fraser, he was the canon or something, the canon chancellor of St Paul's.
The canon has fired himself.
You are worth whatever we're paying you. They're losing £20,000 a day, which I think is just on sales of commemorative Rowan Williams mini trolls. I think it's quite a...
I love propaganda of any kind. I love reading both sides. One paper suggested that they'd use thermal imaging equipment to prove, they actually used the word prove, that 90% of the tents outside St Paul's were unoccupied, therefore it was all a fallacy and we should just bulldoze them all.
It was the Daily Telegraph who claimed that thermal imaging showed 1 in 10 tents were unoccupied at night, and apparently his claims were dismissed by a military scientist as rubbish, saying it was scientifically impossible to believe anything printed in the Daily Telegraph.
In the Telegraph, and they said, well, it was 10 past 12, I mean, and the tents were empty. I mean, it's in the mindset of the Telegraph is, well, surely all decent people at that time will be in bed in their pyjamas with the top button done up, the pyjamas tucked into the trousers, ready for the shipping forecast.
It's this quite new fad of when you go protesting, you bring a tent along as well, which is, you know, I mean, I was in Epping Forest campsite in the summer, and I don't know what Epping Council have done wrong, but they really annoyed a lot of people.
There are now over 200 tents on the site, making it London's third most popular half-term holiday destination.
They are camping next to a branch of Black's, the camping store. And I was thinking the manager of that shop, he must have opened it, and someone was like, you idiot, no one's ever going to want camping gear here, it's in the middle of the city. And he's like, see, I bloody told you.
Like Field of Dreams, he was just waiting. One day the protest
build
will
this
come.
And they will come. Yeah.
That woman, what's her name, Louise Bagshaw, now Louise Mensch, was on telly last week, and she said, oh, look, I mean, they're all getting Starbucks. I mean, that's not anti-capitalism, Starbucks. And you thought, oh, God, if you just think more. If caffeine were nationalised, or the city was bustling with anarcho-syndicalist coffee collectives, the protesters would go to them. But we have to deal with society as it is. I don't remember before the mass privatisations of the 80s, Tories boycotting the phone, gas, electricity, water, or anything made from steel. And to this day, Conservatives will post a letter, public sector, phone the fire brigade, even use the NHS, because they realise that sometimes you need a doctor to do something medical rather than just nail your cheeks to the back of your head for no perceivable reason.
Charles Fraser, the Canon Chancellor of St Paul's, has resigned as talks continue over whether or not to evict the Occupy London Stock Exchange movement from church land. Although high up in the clergy, Dr Giles Fraser was considered a man of the people because he'd actually met some. St Paul's is now closed for longer than it was during the height of the Blitz. Quicker if Hitler had just dropped tents on London. 2 points to Susan. Jeremy, who thinks charity shouldn't be right up your street?
Mary Portas. Mm. I only just found out who she is recently because the other night I forgot to turn off Channel 4 after the news because there then follows 2 hours of drivel in which, Jamie Oliver teaches bad parents how to build an extension that's edible made out of offcuts from Kirsty Allsop. Before every break, they tell you what's coming up after the break, and after the break, they tell you what you've just seen before in case you've got short-term memory loss. And then they have a thing called the boy who's had a bottom where his nose should be. Then some rubbish about property, and then Gordon Ramsay swearing a lot to compensate for the fact that he's got dyed hair and a girl's job. Say that because it would annoy him. But anyway, during that 2 hours, there came on this thing where Mary Portas is angry about shops, and she says things like presentation and appearance are important, which is why she continues to look like someone who's never made peace with the fact they had a failed pop career in the mid-80s. She's angry because there are lots of charity shops in the high street which promote generosity and thrift and recycling instead of greed and consumerism, which is what we need to regenerate a demand-led economy. And the only thing I have against charity shops is that there's nothing decent in them anymore, because you used to be able to get stuff from the people who died who had good suits in the 60s and 50s and stuff, whereas now it's just sort of horrible 90s clothes. Don't buy your pants from there. Things to spend money on: very, very soft toilet paper and pants from real shops. Don't, but you can get pants out of a Skip if you wash them. But don't buy second-hand pants.
No. It's very important for me that charity shops stay open because I know people are thinking, but Susan, your career's on fire. Surely you're busy all the time. You would be incorrect. I've got a lot of time on my hands and charity shops assist me, and I once absolutely did this. I was bored. I went to a charity shop and I bought a wedding dress for £2. I put it on, took a picture of myself, texted it to my mother with the word surprise.
Maybe more charity shops should offer that service. Trouble is, you do get to an age where you have to start buying new clothes. Because I used to always wear jumble and charity shop clothes, and it looked quite cute. But now, if I put them on, I look like Rigsby in Rising Dan.
I don't really understand Mary Portas as a concept. She says that she wants to bring the bustle back to the high street. That surely is a fashion concept that has...
She wants to bring the codpiece back to the chippy.
Mary Portas will suggest there should be a cap on the number of charity shops on the high street in her retail review, which will be delivered to the government next month and which can be returned to Mary Portas within 28 days, if unsuitable, so long as the report is in a resaleable condition. This does not affect your statutory rights. At the end of round two, the scores are Hugo and Jeremy have got 8 points, but still in the lead are Susan and Fred with 10. We start round three with a cutting from the job listings of direct.gov website.
Trainee negotiator. Wage, negotiable. depending on experience.
And our thanks to Timothy Evans for sending that in. Susan, why doesn't wee slicket gowrin timorous beastie translate?
This is the it's a story about the iPhone. There's a new software application called Siri or something like that, I think, which is a voice command software. So you can say to your phone, send a text message to my mother saying, surprise. But it has been discovered that it does not work with the Scottish accent. I don't know about you, Fred, but I do sometimes have difficulty when I come down to Englandshire that people sometimes don't understand my accent. I spent about half an hour in a shop just the other day and I said, can I have a can of Coke? What's that? Can I have a can of Coke? What's that? Can I have a can of Coke? And as it kept going, it sounded more and more aggressive because I was getting annoyed. Can I have a can of Coke? And the police came and it was very difficult. But my worry is that...
I'm sorry, what is this woman talking about? Has anyone got any idea?
Does anybody know if she's given the right answer yet?
Not only is she given the right answer, she's getting a bonus.
I do worry sometimes that when I am in Englandshire, when I'm speaking, it just sounds like, you know, the teacher in Charlie Brown. Wah, 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 and people are just laughing politely when I stop.
Every mobile phone in Scotland's an iPhone. Is that your phone? Aye.
Yeah.
You're going to answer it, aye. I tested it after a few beers and I just said to him, and I now manage Man United.
I've got a friend who moved with her husband up to Aberdeen.
Oh, yeah.
On his first day in his new office, someone came up to him and said, furry boots comfy? And he genuinely said, they're brogues.
That is hilarious. Trust me.
What was the question?
Furry boots comfy.
Are furry boots comfortable?
In your own case, the answer is Denmark.
Whereabouts do you come from?
Furry boots.
So honestly, me and the audience, yeah. No idea. Now Hugo is my kind of Scot. He sounds English.
Yeah. Edinburgh. No, but it's difficult for me. My voice changes depending on who I'm speaking to. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the audience probably think there's about eight of us up here.
What would Alexander Graham Bell have said about all this? Well, who knows? He was Scottish. We would have had no idea.
Scottish people invented everything, didn't they?
They did
the phone,
everything.
Penniskillin.
Yeah.
And
tarmac.
And spinning Jenny invented steam at the Battle of Cardigan.
Yeah.
Telephone. Television.
Television.
Golf. Whiskey. Yep.
Whiskey. Yep.
It's the most fantastic country where you can still have a free education.
Yeah, free education for your prescriptions.
Yeah, I was just trying to balance up the anti-Scottish things. We love our Scottish friends a lot.
That's an edit.
Siri, the Apple iPhone's voice recognition software, doesn't understand the Scottish accent. Apple have refused to comment on Scottish complaints because they don't understand them. One Glaswegian who signed off with the word cheers found it was replaced with the word chairs, which is, of course, a piece of furniture traditionally thrown at closing time in Scottish pubs. 2 points to Susan. Hugo. Why is modern technology not necessarily kindling a love for literature?
This would be e-readers, the Amazon Kindle thing. Mm-hmm. People who own Kindles are apparently reading really sort of lowbrow stuff from them because no one can see what they're reading. They don't need to be embarrassed when they're holding up the book. But I was thinking that's really going to mess things up because from now on, if you're holding a Kindle, people are going to assume you're reading like the Da Vinci Code. So what you have to do is get your Kindle and maybe put it inside the covers of The Brothers Karamazov and sit there like on the tube with the one tucked inside the other.
I think people have been doing this for years with books. I reckon all those people you see reading books by Andy McNab and Chris Ryan have actually got pages of Rebecca from Sunnybrook Farm stuck on the inside.
Well, 55% of those surveyed admitted to reading fewer than a third of the books on their own shelves. And that is certainly true for me. I can't reach most of them. I was told it was just like a book if you get one of these e-readers. And the first thing I did was break the spine. It's hopeless.
I've got one.
Have you?
It's good, but you can't put it on your shelf and impress people when they come around. I mean, you can, but you've just got to take them to it, point it out.
I like having books. I like to read them, obviously, but it's also a really... I've been with my better half for 9 years now. That's a long time. You start running out of ways to annoy them. And one thing that really annoys my better half is Lee likes everything alphabeticised, and I hate it. So I suffer from insomnia, so sometimes I get up at 3 a.m. and just mess them all up, but don't say anything. And then she'll just walk in, and it's like... there's been a poltergeist or something. But she doesn't investigate the paranormal. She just then spends 3 hours rearranging them, goes to bed, I get up, I do it again. Honestly, it's brilliant. It's absolutely true.
Do you remember that thing when they did the Harry Potter books and they printed some with different covers so that adults didn't need to be embarrassed? It just allowed you to spot the thick adults, didn't it?
I auditioned for the first Harry Potter film to play somebody, I don't know who. They said, because my daughter would have been younger than she is now, because that's how time goes. And they said, they said to me, so, Jeremy, you're a dad? I said, yeah, I'm a dad. They said, so, I expect your daughter's a really big fan of Harry Potter books. And I said, no, she doesn't like them. Didn't get the part.
A survey has found that users of e-books, such as Amazon's Kindle, use them to read books considerably more lowbrow than those that fill their shelves at home. Thrillers by Dan Brown are often downloaded, with readers reporting the flat, two-dimensional and almost weightless nature of the e-reader as being a perfect medium for his books. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Ms. Kalman.
This has been sent in by Charlie Worsley, and it's from the Jersey Evening Post. Conservationists are using BBC Radio 4 to stop foxes attacking swans. They caused a huge amount of damage, said swan-haired Dave Wheeler. It was a farmer that put us onto Radio 4. In his own words, Radio 4 is so boring that foxes won't go near it.
Mr. McCauley.
This is from Gordon Ayres, who said that he got a letter from the DVLA that said, if you have received this acknowledgement letter, you do not need to contact us, as this confirms you have updated our records. If you have not received it, phone us.
Mr. Rifkin.
This is sent in by Steve Spencer, and it's from a publication called The Umbrella, which is the English language publication for Rio in Brazil. And it's an article about Wandsworth Town, and it says, there are a few interesting buildings in Wandsworth, including Wandsworth Prison. It is the largest prison in the UK, currently able to hold 1,665 prisoners. Alongside Liverpool, which is of a similar size, it is one of the largest prisons in Western Europe.
Mr. Hardy.
This was from a small ad in the New Forest Post sent in by Alistair Deneen. Totten Art Society, demonstration on using mixed media to paint a chicken. Refreshments available.
Let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Susan and Fred with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cinema listing from the Oxford Gazette.
We need to talk about Kevin. A film portrayal of what happens when the natural maternal bond fails. Exclusive screening for parents with babies under one.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz was Susan Kalman, Fred McCauley, Hugo Rifkind and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script is written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Gareth Gwynn, with additional material by Liz Hobbs and Benjamin Partridge. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.